Hello again. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And I think they got all the problems worked out, because last Friday when I was on, they said everything was going haywire. The gremlins were really playing around with the equipment. So they said now they think everything is working fine. So let's hope so. Because last week it was a good half hour or hour delayed on all the programs. All right. Well, tonight I don't have any guests. I'm just going to be talking. But let me give out the toll-free number if you want to call in. It's 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And I'm welcoming anybody to call in tonight, because I'm not really sure what I'm going to talk about. I've got a lot of, always got something I can bring up. But if anybody wants to call in, especially if they're having any kind of physical problems or have questions with that, that's mainly what I'm going to be focusing on tonight. So if anyone wants to call in, they're welcome to do it. It's 877-876-5227. Okay. I'm leaving bright and early in the morning for Moscow again. You probably know I was gone the whole month of August in London, Paris, and Moscow. And I didn't think I was going to go back so quick, because I was busy planning my other trips, because I'll be going out of the country again in November. And I didn't think I was going to go back, but these people met with me the night before I left Moscow, and they kept saying, "You got to come back. There's another international conference." And I said, "I can't turn around and come back in a month." But I don't know if you know, but the Russians are very persuasive. This is an international health conference dealing with alternative medicine. And this is the one that's going to be leading to me going over there. I think it'll be this next year, because that's one thing we're going to work out on this trip. Besides the conference, they're going to be talking to me about setting up some kind of an agenda or a schedule to go back next year. I'll be working with the academy. It's called the Nostradamus Academy, which is unusual, because a lot of you know about my work with Nostradamus, and I have the 3 volumes of the translation of the prophecy. But it's the Nostradamus Academy, and it deals with alternative medicine and natural healing. And this is very big over there, and they said they want me to come back next year. They have a 5-year course. I told you before about the one in New Mexico that I teach my method at, that they have a 4-year course there. The one in Moscow has a 5-year course dealing with natural medicine. So they said they want me to begin teaching my method through the academy all over Russia and the Baltic states, and even expanding out into the former communist countries. Then they were even talking about expanding into Europe, so I think this is going to be going on for several years. But I'm already teaching in Europe anyway. But this really sounds very ambitious. But these people are very serious about spreading natural medicine and alternative healing all over Russia and as far as they can. So that's one thing I'll be doing, but I got to leave bright and early in the morning, head out again for Moscow. At least we here we have one flight that I can take. That's a direct flight. I just have to get to Chicago, and they only started this the first of the year. We fly direct from Chicago to Moscow. That saves a lot of time having to transfer in London. So anyway, we'll be meeting, and I'll be working out this program for when I return next year. But it's a really fast trip. I'm just going and do the conference and then turn around and come back the next day, because I've got a lot of other things going on. Like Judge Judy always says, I've got a lot of fish to fry, a lot of things to do here. So I'll be turning around and coming back so I can get ready for the other things that are scheduled. Okay, I was trying to think what to talk about tonight. One thing I did want to talk about was the healing that's involved in my my work. Now, a lot of you probably know I've talked this is now 3 years that I've been on the air with BBS Radio. 3 years, can you imagine that? It doesn't seem like it's been that long since they asked me to come on the air. But it's been 3 years now, and I don't know how many shows I have in the archives. I know it's close to 100, because when they do the archives, you know, they're only the ones that are the original shows. And then when I'm doing, when I'm not gone and I can't be on the air, then they pull a show out of the archives. So all the shows are not original that are on there, and we're trying to mark all of them so that you will know which ones were original shows and not the ones that were reruns. Because we did get an email that there were some listeners were complaining because they said that it was very hard to tell that they want to go in the archives on all of the hosts with BBS Radio. They were going into the archives trying to see which ones they had missed, and they said it was impossible to tell because they didn't have any description of what the shows, old shows were about. Well, we have been doing it all along, putting a little blurb, just one sentence anyway, saying what the show is about. This makes it easier for the people at BBS, too. Whenever they are going to do an old show, they can see what it was about and pull it out. But they said a lot of the hosts are not doing that, and it's very hard on the people who are listening to find that. Well, we've been doing it all along. But I think there is close now to 100 original shows that you can pick from when you go through the archives. And those are the ones that are being used. But imagine, 3 years already, and we've been with Don through all of the problems he's been having with all of the equipment, and I've watched him grow tremendously. But when he started out and he had to bring in all of this high-tech equipment and make changes, he has really grown, and he has his heart and soul in this project. And I think it's been wonderful to see what one person can accomplish once they set their heart to it and really believe in what they're doing, that what they're able to accomplish in this wonderful project, because it's growing all the time. And I'm really proud to be associated with it this long. But anyway, now let's go on to what the show is going to be about tonight. Lots of you who have listened to the show for many, many years now know about my work. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the healing cases and some of the things that are going on in my therapy work, because I'm seeing changes happen. Things are, you'll never stay the same. There's never stagnant. It's always changes, but that's the way life is. And I've been doing the hypnotherapy for so long that I see changes happening. I see things that are going on in my work as it evolves and changes. Because it is a living thing, and it is evolving, and it's helping a lot more people. But in my work, you know, I started out 40 years ago in regular hypnosis, and then for the last 30 years, it's been past life regressions and past life therapy. And over those 30 years is when I developed my own technique, the technique that I use, and I'm teaching it now all over the world, and this is what I'm going to be doing when I go to Russia and all the other countries. I'm teaching this unique technique that I have developed myself. Now, there's lots of other hypnosis methods out there. There are many, many classes that teach past life regression. These are all good. But what I found in my work is that's the tip of the iceberg. That's where you begin. But there is so much beyond that. There's so much more than I've found you can do with hypnosis. And that's why I say it's a living thing. It's an evolving thing. Because I'm discovering more and more ways I can use it to help people. But the people that have the past life regressions, They're going to get some information, but that, I said, only the very beginning of it. Most hypnotists just teach, they just do a past life regression with someone, and that's all they do. After the person leaves the office, they'll say, well, it was interesting. I was in ancient Greece. I was in ancient Rome. But what does that have to do with me now? Now, the average hypnotist doesn't know how to follow it through, or they don't even know it can be done. They just figure, well, it's an interesting curiosity to just go back to a past life and just let it go at that. But I found you can get some information, but you can't get it all. Now, in most of the hypnosis methods also, they teach the student to stay in the light state of trance. This is where most of them operate, because they say, you don't want to go near the deep level. Strange things happen there. And the people who read my books, you know strange things happen there, because that's where I work. But in the deep level is where all the answers are. That's where all the knowledge is. So I prefer to work in the deepest possible level of trance, which is the somnambulistic level. And at that level, the person doesn't remember anything when they wake up. So you don't have the conscious mind interference. In the light levels, they do remember. They're saying, oh yeah, I made the whole thing up. I remember everything that went on. But the deep level, you get that that conscious mind out of the picture, so they can't interfere because they don't know what's going on. A lot of times when they wake up, they'll say, oh, I just took a nap. You didn't get anything. I fell asleep, not realizing that I've got 2 hours on tape, and we have found the answers to all of their questions. And as you know, with my method, you can have instantaneous healings. This is what's so remarkable about it, that it's a very valuable form of therapy. It doesn't take a long time, just takes one session to get to the heart of the problem. And that's where I believe in working, because we have found so much that you can do with all of this. So what I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about some of these things that I've discovered. Now, at the deepest possible level of the trance, I told you it's like they don't remember anything, or they may remember bits and pieces like you do of a dream when you wake up. But I found by working in that level, I was able to contact the part that really does all the work, because I don't do it. I am the facilitator, and I allow this greater power to come in and do the actual work and the actual healing and the answers of the questions. Some of this I'm repeating myself for those who have heard the show before, but I wanted to tell it for those who haven't so that we can go into some of these things I want to discuss. But in the part that I work with, I call the subconscious mind. It's not the subconscious the way the psychiatrists define it. That is a childish part of the mind. It can be used for habits, stop smoking, lose weight, but that's not where all the answers are. The part that I call the subconscious, if you were going to define it, you might say it's the higher self, the oversoul, the higher consciousness. This is the part that is so big and so huge that it has the answers to everything. It is so powerful, but yet it cares for every single person that I work with. It has such love. You can feel the tremendous love that comes through when it's talking about each person that it works with. It really, truly wants to help that person. Of course, first we have to get them out of the way, because they're their own worst enemy, and the conscious mind doesn't know anything. That's the part, the cocky part. That's the part we have to get out of the way so it can take over. But the amazing thing, at this power, I found a way to contact it through everybody I work with. Well, the experts say that the average is 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 30 people will go into the somnambulistic level spontaneously. The somnambulistic level is the deepest level of trance where I work. They'll say 1 out of 20 will go there spontaneously. But in what I've discovered, it's the other way around. 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 30 will not go. So you have almost 90% success rate of getting somebody into the deep level and their own conscious mind out of the picture. So that's the part that we get to work with. So when you do the past life regression, that's only the beginning. But still, you get the person out of the way, and you go to the most appropriate time. Now, I don't lead anyone anywhere in my work, because people come in and they'll say, oh, I'm interested in Egyptian times, I want to go there, or I'm interested in the Civil War, or I know I had a past life with Jesus, I must have been a disciple or a follower of Jesus, I want to go there. I don't do that, because if I were to tell the person to go to a certain time or a certain place, afterwards they would tell me, well, I only saw that because you told me to. And you can imagine what the skeptics would say, too. Oh, you led them there. So that's what, I don't do that at all. In my method, they will go where they're supposed to go. The subconscious will take them to the most appropriate time and place. And I never know where that's going to be. I just go along and ask questions. I never know where they're going to end up, but I ask the questions, get through the past life, you may find some answers, but then we get to the real work, which is working with the subconscious mind and getting the answers to all the questions they came for. Now, you know, like I said, I call it the subconscious. I didn't know what else to call it. They said, we don't care what you call us. We'll work with you. They said, the main thing is just call us so we can work. So it's a beautiful, wonderful part to work with. And I call them they. So when I'm referring to they, you'll know what I'm talking about. But one thing I did find is we make ourselves sick. The normal state of the body should be perfect health at all times. You should never get sick. We make ourselves sick. Now, if you're powerful enough to make yourself sick, you're also powerful enough to heal yourself. But first you've got to find out, why did I do this? Why did I allow this to happen? And there's many people will tell me, my clients come in and they'll say, what do you mean? I don't want to be sick. I didn't do this to myself. But on another level, they did. And this is the thing. You don't really realize what they did and why they did it. That's the part that I have to work out. And it becomes rather like a detective story, trying to find the answers. You find the clues and find the answers of what's really going on. Because I found that every ache, pain, symptom of the body is a subconscious mind trying to give you a message. It's trying to tell you something. It's trying to get your attention. The only way it knows how, through pain. That's the only thing we really pay attention to, is when something is hurting. You're going along day by day, we wouldn't have any idea what it was trying to tell us. But it's watching us all the time with our guides and guardian angels, which are separate, and they're always wanting to help you. But you know how people are. They start getting off track, going in the wrong direction, maybe making a wrong decision, and there's nothing there to tell them what's going on. We make mistakes all the time. That's what life is all about, making mistakes, learning from them, and trying to perfect ourselves in this school that we're going to here on Earth. But our guides and guardian angels are always there wanting to help us, but they cannot interfere. The law of non-interference is very strong on this planet. It's the predominant law. They cannot interfere. But if you ask for their help, that's what they're there for. and boy, will they help you. But they said, if you don't ask for our assistance, we don't have anyone to assist. So they're always there to help you. And they work in conjunction with the subconscious part. So if for some reason you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, or you're going off on the wrong track, or something is happening, you will get physical symptoms. These physical symptoms are trying to tell you something, trying to give you a message to wake you up. Well, of course, we don't understand. So it gets a little worse, a little worse. Begins to hurt a little more, maybe spreads to another part of the body, and we feel this. It's still doing it the only way it knows how, through pain, to get our attention. Well, then, if we're still not paying attention, it can eventually lead to something very serious, something that might need an operation. Maybe it works its way into an illness or something. We don't want it to go that far. That's the important part. We don't want it to go that far. We want to try to figure out what is it trying to tell us before it gets to the point that it's too hard to fix. I have lots of clients coming to me who are scheduled for operations, for surgery, and it's my job to help them, to help themselves, really, to help them to find out what's causing all of this. And then they won't have to have the operation. They, you know who I mean by they, the subconscious part, they say no surgery, no invasion of the body. They also don't like drugs. They said the body can heal itself. The body is a miraculous machine. It is beautiful, it's perfect, that it was created to take care of itself and heal itself if we don't get in the way. But these things happen. People's lives get complicated. They create these symptoms. They create things in their life. And first thing you know, it becomes very difficult to treat all of this. Now, you know, when you go to a doctor, you're only in there for a short period of time. The doctor doesn't have time to sit down and talk to you and say, okay, we got an hour or so. Tell me what's going on in your life. Tell me about your marriage, about your home life. Tell me about your kids, your problems with your children. Maybe your problems are with your mother-in-law, or your father-in-law, or your husband, or your ex-husband, or your boss. Tell me what's really going on in your life. A doctor doesn't have time to do that. He just goes from one patient to the other, looking at the symptoms, looking at the body externally, without realizing all these things are really being caused by something else. If he had time, he would realize, well, a lot of these things that are happening to the person are caused by what's going on in their personal life. But, of course, he doesn't have time to do it. That's where my work comes in, because I take the time, and I've found how valuable that is. That's why I only see one client in a day. The most I can see is two in a day. And if I do that, I'm going way into the night, because I can spend easily 4 hours with a client. A lot of that is spent talking. I don't let anyone else sit in on the session. It's just me and the client. And I just let them talk and tell me everything. Nobody's there to listen, because if somebody else is sitting in, they'll hold back, even if it's their husband or their wife. But if they're all alone, just me and the client, just let them talk. And you'd be surprised what comes out. Later they'll say, well, I've never told any of this to anyone, but it feels so good to get it off my chest, because it's not going anywhere. The therapist, the hypnotist, the hypnotherapist is bound by the same oath that a doctor is bound by. That is just between you and the client, and you cannot divulge anything that they say. And when I write my books, I always change the person's name. I change their occupation. I ask them for permission to put the stories in the books. But I'm not allowed to divulge any personal information, even to their relatives, about it. I give them the tape afterwards of the session, and it's up to them who they share it with. But I found just talking to them really makes a difference. I had one client said, you know, it was worth it just to come to see you, just to talk, to be able to talk to somebody who's not going to judge me, someone who's not going to belittle me or tell me I'm wrong. Just to be able to talk means so much, because that's part of all of this. You cannot judge. You can't have any prejudice. That's just a person that is looking for help, and that's what I try to do. That's why a lot of people cannot become therapists. They get too involved in the person's problem. This is an empath, the same way as healers do. Healers will become so involved in the person's symptoms, they take those symptoms on themselves, which doesn't help anybody, really. But you have to be objective enough to listen and want to help the person, but not take it on yourself. That's why not everyone can do this kind of work. But then when the person leaves, I forget everything that we've discussed. You'd have to. Can you imagine seeing thousands of people and carrying all of their problems around with you? It's just too hard. You couldn't do it. But I've begun to find out most of the people that come, they have the same problems. They'll come in and sit down and start telling me their symptoms. Immediately you can tell what's going on in their life, because most of the symptoms are the same again and again and again. The subconscious is very literal about what part of the body it affects when it's trying to give you a message. It'll always be the same message. Now, Louise Hay found this out. We're all coming to the same conclusions through different methods. And I think if that happens, it shows it's valid. There must be truth to it if we're all coming up with the same thing just by different methods. Well, she, in her books, lists these different parts of the body as referring to different things. People have asked me, why don't I write a book putting down what these different aches and pains and things in the body mean? I said, I can't do that because every case is individual. Everyone who comes through my door, they may have the same symptoms, and it'll usually, 9 times out of 10, refer to the same thing, but then you're going to have that one other person that is different, and it'll have a different meaning. That's why you can't say this is the cause for everything like that. And that's why I'm still learning. I'm still finding out a lot of things. My daughter, Julia, is doing this work now, and she said it's amazing when the person comes in and sits down and starts talking about their symptoms. Even your friends that you know, when they start talking about their symptoms, she said the person becomes so transparent because we've learned to look at this now and we know what's going on in their life. They become very transparent. And, of course, they don't see it that way. And when I'm doing my classes, I'll ask the students, okay, this certain organ of the body the person's having trouble with, what does that organ represent? Well, immediately they start thinking of the medical terms, what the organ does in the body as a machine to process the body. They're thinking of the way a doctor would and the way we're taught in school, medical terms. That's not what I mean. I want them to think in what does that organ represent? What is it trying to do? What's it trying to tell the person? What metaphysically, what does that part represent? I'll give you a couple examples. People will like the intestines. The intestines and the urinary tract. Those are both for elimination, aren't they? That's what they represent in the body, therefore elimination in the body. So somebody comes in who has constant diarrhea or constant urination, the first thing you think of, what are you trying to get rid of in your life? Not in your body, but in your life, because it's representing something in the person's life. Now, constant mean the diarrhea and urinary tract infections to where they have to urinate a lot. There's something in their life they're trying to get out of their life, trying to eliminate from their life. That's what it represents. Now, constipation, on the other hand, is holding on to something. What is it that they need to get rid of, because that's what that part of the body does, but they're not doing it. They're holding on to it and not releasing it, and it's causing physical problems. You have to start looking at these things from a different perspective. And once you do, it all just falls right into place and makes perfect sense. Then when the person is telling me about their problems in their life, it all begins to make sense. They always look at it separately. The body doing one thing, they don't see how their personal life is causing it all. They keep those two things separate, your personal life and your physical symptoms. They don't realize how they overlap and cause problems. Now, the most common things that people come in and complain about when they come to see me are back problems. Sometimes they have shoulder and neck problems going down the spine into the lower back. I have a lot of people coming in with those same problems again and again and again. And I usually ask them, do you feel like you're carrying a heavy load? And they usually say, oh, yeah, you don't know my life. It's just there's so much pressure. There's so much, pressure on the shoulders. They feel like they're carrying the weight of the world, either responsibility in their family, their job, whatever it is. But they start talking about it and begin to put two and two together. And, of course, one of the cures in this is to get rid of the pressure, get rid of the load they're carrying. This is not easy. These answers are never easy because we create our lives. We bring all these problems into our life. So it's not easy to just get rid of these things. But if you start looking at it, they can see a way to lighten the load, to get rid of the influences in their life that are causing the problem. They just have to see if they don't, it's going to continue to cause them physical problems. And one thing they have said, if they have an operation and have not found the cause, the problem just comes back or it moves to a different part of the body. They have not removed the cause. They have not found why this is happening, what the body is trying to tell the person. Till they find what the body is trying to tell them, they're not going to get rid of it. This makes it harder, and they have to suffer more. That was why the subconscious said no surgery, because that's not going to eliminate the problem. Now, another common thing that I have is people coming in with hip, leg, knee, ankles, feet problems. Problems with the hips all the way down through the extremities. This is very common. And usually when people have those complaints, the first thing I ask them is, have you come to a crossroads in your life? Something is happening where you have to make a decision. You have to go in one direction or the other. You have to make a decision which way to go. And maybe the other decision is something you would really like to do. I don't know. It could be anything. It could be a marriage. It could be a divorce. It could be a job. It could be moving. But you have to make a decision on something. And it may be something you want to do, but maybe we get comfortable. We're in a situation where we figure, all right, I'll just keep going on with this. But if you make the move the other way, maybe you'll have less money, maybe things won't be as comfortable, but that's really the way you want to go. You're faced with a decision, whatever it is, one way or the other. So you're trying to figure out, which way should I go? Well, in the meantime, you usually don't go anywhere. You just stay put in the same situation you're in, the same problems. When you have problems in the legs, knees, hips, feet, and ankles, that means holding back, not moving in the direction you're supposed to go in, holding back. And it can continue to, I've had people come in to where they're supposed to have back surgery in the case of carrying a load, or they're wanting to have knee replacements, hip replacements. They've held on to these problems so long that they have really created a serious problem, and they're wanting to operate on these parts. But first you got to find out what is it I don't want to make a decision about? I don't want to go this direction. What's causing it? Those are some of the most common things that I get. Then we have all the other physical organs, different problems with the organs. And the first thing I always tell my students is, what does that organ represent? For instance, the kidneys. The kidneys, the liver, they are filters. They are filtering poisons out of the body. What is it in their life that they need to get rid of and they're holding on to, they can't get rid of it, and it's trying to be filtered through? It's all representative. Everything is literal. Representative. Every part of the body, and I've seen this again and again and again. Now, Louise Hay agrees with me, too, on the fact that eye problems mean what is it you don't want to see? What don't you want to look at? Hearing is what is it you don't want to hear? You start looking at yourself in a different way, you're going to find a lot of things that are going to change. Now, in my work, sometimes it goes all the way back to a past life, especially the way the person died in a past life. That will carry over into this life as a residue, especially if they died traumatically, and it'll carry over into this life. You can see where phobias come from. That would be the obvious one. Fear of fire, fear of heights, fear of water would be the way they died in another lifetime. And they carry that over, especially if it was the last lifetime they were in. But I always take them to the most significant one anyway, whatever that one is. You can see where the phobias come from. Allergies, a lot of them come from the same thing too, from past lives where they were exposed to different things, or something involved in the way they died. And he carries over into this lifetime as an allergy. But I've also asked the person when they come in to see me, when did the allergy start? There's usually a trigger point. When did the allergy start? At what age? And sometimes it starts when they're teenagers. That's a very vulnerable time period, a teenager, when you're going through puberty. Hormones are changing. Everything in the person's life is changing. It's not unusual to develop allergies at that age. So usually when they'll tell me they have an allergy, I'm going to know, when did it start? And that's when I look for the trigger point. What was going on in your life at that time, in that age that you were at? What was going on in your life, in your personal life? And these are things sometimes they have never even put together. They've never even thought there was a connection. So just getting people to look at things in a little different way makes a big difference. But a lot of the physical problems, too, go back to the way the person died in another lifetime, especially if they have a pattern set up of many lifetimes in a row where they have all they've died with injury to the same part of the body. It becomes very significant. It's a very sensitive part of the body once they have had many lifetimes there. So then it's time to clear it up. There's no sense in dragging on this pattern any longer. Because I had one young man who I think I've written about him in my books. He was a college student. He was really pretty old for a college student, but he'd been through the war, and he'd been trying for many years to graduate. Well, he had difficulty even finishing a term because he couldn't eat. He would throw up if he tried to eat. If he was sitting there in the class, he would get nauseated. It was always nausea or diarrhea, something to do with the intestines. And it wasn't unusual for him to pass out in class, especially if it came to times for tests and things. He always felt like he was under a great deal of stress. And naturally, he would be weakened because he couldn't eat. But he did want to finish college, but he just couldn't even finish one of the classes. So we wanted to find out what it was. We found a series of five lives in a row where he had died of injury to the intestines, that part of the body. And it set up a pattern there of a sensitivity in that part of the body. You know, fall off a cliff, run over by a carriage, bayoneted, hit killed with a sword. It was always the same part of the body which set up a sensitivity. So he was insecure and afraid. It would cause a reaction in that part of the body. But also we found out, we went even further, that when he was a child in this lifetime, the subconscious said, I hear the mother saying to the little child, you make me sick. You make me want to throw up. That's why you have to be careful what you say to little children. They take it so personal. And he had put this into his mind and buried it there, along with the pattern that he had set up of all the lifetimes with the sensitivity to that part of the body, and it created this situation. Well, as soon as we found out where all of this come from, and it would be resolved, then when he woke up, the first thing he said was, I feel hungry, I want to eat. And it wasn't too much long after that, I got letters from him. He was finishing his classes, and I got one, I think a year or so later, he graduated, and he wanted to become a psychologist. He wanted to help people. So just finding out these patterns and where these things come from can make a huge amount of difference. I could go on with many, many cases, and I do this in my classes also, to let people know, to be more open to this if they're going to be a therapist and work in this kind of area. We do go through a lot of this. I think I've said in my other shows, I found most of the cases with cancer, especially cancer in the intestinal areas, are caused by suppressed anger. It's well known now that it's caused by stress. But also I've found it's caused by suppressed anger. The person is angry at something, and they can't let it out. They can't talk to anybody. If they could only talk to somebody, but most people, well, they just said, I don't have any problems, I'm fine. They hold it inside, and when it's held inside, it begins to churn around and churn around. It doesn't have any release. It's hate. Anger is a very, very strong emotion. It has to have a release somewhere. It can't be released through talking in some way. It churns around and churns around till finally it begins to eat away at the organs and does cause disease. So you have to find out, what is it you're angry about? I had one client who had Crohn's disease. It's also the same part of the body. And she had it really bad. They'd already had some operations where they'd taken out most of her intestines. And we found out it was suppressed anger. So these things you have to get out. You can't hold them in. That's the dangerous part, holding in any kind of emotion. It's much better to have a safety valve. I don't mean get angry and hit someone or yell or scream like that, but at least talk to somebody, to somebody you can trust to get these things out. But I could go on and on with many, many of the cases, many, many of the things I found. But something unusual has been happening in the last couple of years in my work. As I said, I take them where they're supposed to go. I never know where that's going to be. Sometimes, instead of going into a past life, they go into this lifetime when they were a child. They go into when they were a child. And I always tell them, as a rule, I skip this life and we go directly back to where they're supposed to go. But if they go into this life, maybe there's something there that they need to see, something they need more information about, something they've covered up and hidden from themselves all of these years. And we don't know what it is, because they don't know. They won't even admit it to themselves that it's there. It's so easy for us to forget things. Some people tell me, I don't remember my childhood. And I said, well, that's not unusual. I have some clients that don't remember anything back past their teenage years. And some people remember from the day they were born. Everybody remembers differently. But I always think that if they don't remember their early years, or especially not before they were teenagers, something traumatic must have happened there that caused them to shut off all the memories. It's much safer that way. So sometimes when we do this, I never direct them to go there, but they will pop up as a child. And we are going through a great deal of very intense emotions. Finally, the emotions are being released. They're being let out. They've been held in there way, way too long, most of their life. I had a woman come to see me who was almost 80 years old. And her entire life had been a real mess. It's funny, I have people who sit on my couch in my office, and they tell me, my life is in the toilet. I said, how many times I've heard that? My life's in the toilet, and I feel like telling them, join the club. Who put it there? You put it there. You're the one who creates your life. You're the one who creates everything that happens in your lifetime, in your life. Well, the sooner you realize it, the easier it is to go on, move on, and just release it and let's get on with it. Well, this woman was almost 80 years old. She had had an awful life, all kinds of things that happened to her. And she kept saying, the main thing she kept focusing on was she said, something happened to me when I was 3 or 4 years old. My mother did something to me, and I can't never forget it. And I'm angry at her. I've had an anger at my mother all my life. And, you know, we talked about it, and I kept saying, well, the first thing you're going to have to do is release it and let it go. It's not worth it. And she said, oh, I have. I've worked on it. I've let it go. And I said, no, you haven't. She sat there for almost 2 hours going on and on about her life, telling me everything wrong in her life, and still going back to her mother. And there must have been something really, really bad that happened back with her mother. And her mother died at when she was very young. But I told her, you haven't let it go, because that's all you've done is talk about it. That's all you've done is focus on it. It's still there churning around. Well, when we had the session, I thought she was going to go back to the appropriate past life and we'd get started from there. Instead, she went back to where she was, this little girl, 3 or 4 years old, and she really loved her mother. They were very close. And what happened was her mother died suddenly, unexpectedly. But the relatives didn't tell the little girl what had happened. I guess they figure what a little kid 3 or 4 years old isn't going to know what's happening anyway. That's what we have to realize. They do know what's happening. They know more than you think they do. So they're probably thinking this little kid 3 or 4 years old won't understand. Anyway, they didn't tell her what happened. Instead, they took her to the funeral home, led her up to the coffin without even explaining what had happened and that her mother was actually dead. They never told her anything. It was a terrible shock to the little girl. She couldn't figure out why her mother was laying there in the coffin and why she wouldn't get up and come home with her. She didn't understand any of it. It was a terrible, terrible shock. So after that, she had this great anger with her mother. Why did you leave me? Why did you go away? Why did you leave me? Didn't you love me? Now, it sounds irrational to an adult, but to a child, it was very real. So all her life, she had this suppressed anger with her mother, even though it was unjustified. Some clients will tell me, I think something happened to me when I was a child, and I'm afraid to go back and look at it, but I know there's something there. And I tell them, things always look different from the viewpoint of a child than they do from the viewpoint of an adult. It always affects the child in a different way. You can look at the same thing through this method and see what happened to you as a child, and then they'll say, that's what it was? That's all it was? And I've been holding this all these years, and that's all it was? Because it was important to a child. An adult sees it with different eyes. I had one young man who came to see me who he thought he had UFO experiences, and that's all he was going on and about, these different experiences he thought he had. Now, I've investigated UFOs for 20 years. I know what sounds like a legitimate experience, but this is all he wanted to explore. I didn't think there was much in there. Sometimes people have dreams, and they think it all relates to UFOs. But that's what he wanted to explore. So anyway, we had the session, and we were going back. He didn't go back to any of that. Instead, he went to when he was a child, very young child. And he was going through something. It had to do, I believe, with his father, if I remember correctly. He was very, very angry, terribly angry. And most of the session was him releasing this anger. It had been pent up in him and growing to the point, I think, he could have become violent. Even on the surface, he was very mild-mannered and very calm. All of this was very deep-seated and buried for so long that it could have exploded in this life and he could have been very dangerous. So most of the session was releasing this anger, finding out where it came from, and getting rid of it. And then when I got to the subconscious part, I asked it that I thought we were going to explore UFO experiences. It said, not this time, not at this time. The most important thing right now is to get rid of this anger so he can move on in his life and do what he's supposed to do. These things are deep-seated. They don't even know they're there. And I had a young man just the other day who's only 21 years old, seemed very normal, nothing wrong. He told me that his mother had died when he was very young. His father was disabled and he was in an institution, so he was raised by his relatives. But he seemed like he had really adjusted wonderfully. So I'm very proud of you. It's very admirable that you have gone on. He had gone to college. He's become a very, very good person, a very successful person. And so I didn't know what he was going to find. But instead of going to a past life, he went back to this time when he was a child. And he cried and cried and cried. It was very deep-seated sorrow. And this was so important to get it out and let it out. And what it was, he had never really dealt with his mother dying. He never really grieved. It was all buried. And it was very, very important to get all of this out and release it before we could do anything else. So I never know what's going to happen. Sometimes they go to past lives. Sometimes they go to childhood and release all of these things. Either way, it's valuable therapy because they get it out, it's gone, and they can go on with their life. So this is welcome to my world anyway. People think this is fun. It's hard work. And along the way, I get information that I write my books about, but most of it is working with hundreds and hundreds of people who have problems, and that's my job, is to try to help them. And now I'm teaching this method all over the world so other people can, other therapists and doctors can know there's a lot more to this than you think, and we can help a lot of people this way. If anybody out there is interested in my classes, the next one is going to be the first part of November in Hawaii, in Kona on the Big Island. I just had one a week ago in Florida. That's my last one this year on the mainland. I'm going to do one in Kona on the Big Island the first part of November. Then I go on to Australia. I'll have a class in Perth and a class in Sydney and one in Wellington, New Zealand. Also, in all three of those cities, I'm going to be having an advanced class for the ones who had the first level last year. And you look on my website, the next one in the States is going to be here in Arkansas in March 2009, and that'll be the next one here on this continent. You look on my website, Ozark Mountain, OZARKMT.com, and find my schedule for my speaking engagements, my classes, my sessions, everything is all on there. And we're coming up, I'm a little over time here, so I'm going to have to go off now. Thanks for listening, everybody. And I'm off to Russia in the morning. I'll be talking to you next week. Thank you, and good night, everyone.